Don't move, just leave your darling on the turf. Here upon the turf, lean back and stay a while. Now the wolf is upon the turf.
Right now, Brad Crandall. Author Norman Mailer is currently regarded as one of the leading voices of the so-called New Left. He'll be our guest in just a few minutes when he'll describe his participation in and personal reaction to last October's massive peace march on the Pentagon. Monitor music first, and it's the latest from the Arbors. Norman Mailer has entertained, enraged, and diverted the American reading public for over 20 years now, ever since the publication of his novel of World War II, The Naked and the Dead. His new book, The Armies of the Night, is about another kind of war. Its subject, the massive march on the Pentagon of last October and the anti-Vietnam War demonstration. Mr. Mailer, welcome to Monitor.
Oh, thank you.
At the Pentagon, what specific instances do you think you personally will remember the longest and the most clearly?
Well, I think crossing the bridge from Lincoln Memorial to Virginia was an extraordinary
bridge there. Across
it was an extraordinary moment. It wasn't a moment. It took actually to an hour and a half to cross it because we moved very slowly. And we sat down many times on the bridge. You know, there was great tension on the one hand. There was a real unspoken fear of a stampede.
Mm-hmm.
And people could have very easily gotten killed on that bridge. You're just trampled to death. If they'd ever been asleep, sort of panicking, if fights had broken out or anything of that sort. And there was a great possibility of that, because the march was not organized.
There was also a rather severe dichotomy of thought, not multiplicity of thought, among the people who were there themselves, the demonstrators.
Yes. Everything from people, rather mild, gentle liberals, who were a little aghast at the fact that the Pentagon was actually going to be so to speak, invaded, all the way down to activists who were furious that the march was not, you know, going to be violent enough or active enough.
And each thinking that the other just might do something that would set off a spark and there would be real trouble all the way around.
Oh, yeah, between the marshals and, you know, between the soldiers, U.S. soldiers on one hand and the demonstrators on the other. enormous tension there, because they each were terrified of each other, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The march had many comic aspects as well as epic aspects, and one of them was this great fear on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a shock to realize suddenly that the MPs were scared of us as we were scared of them.
Well, I think it also must be remembered that on both sides there were large numbers of people, particularly young people, for whom direct physical violence was something brand spanking new.
You never come across it.
And that would come as something of a shock, too, the realization that you were in a situation where you just might suddenly come nose to nose with some of that stuff.
Well, and there was a great area of potential violence. As we crossed the bridge, no one knew it was waiting at the Pentagon. All we knew was that the 20,000 troops had been ordered in from various parts of the country. So you have this enormous number of troops around.
And one thing that interests me more and more in modern times, and in modern writers who, like yourself, deal with the novel as history, or history as a novel, is the fact that, particularly now, perhaps because of the mass media, I don't know, but of any given incident or any given reportage of that incident.
I think you're right. The happening is what people care about.
Yeah, and at risk of getting into McLuhanisms, that's, in some ways, involves living as we do from one distortion to another, so to speak, one crisis to another, if you like, but one distortion to another, too, because in many cases the crisis is out of context.
Well, I think all that people care about by now are situations, use the word dramatic. I mean, a dramatic situation is a situation where you really don't know how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great deal at stake. You can't always necessarily say what quite is at stake. All you know is that something is changing, and things are going to be different when it's over, and you don't know quite how they're going to be different. You don't even know whether they necessarily will be different, but you don't know how it's going to turn out. And I think that the reason there's such a taste for that, such a large appetite for that among everybody, is that because we live in a technological society, which places this enormous emphasis upon method always,
mm-hmm.
Getting methods that control more and more and more of our, not only of our activities, but even our very thoughts. Although we even tend to think in techniques by now.
And we have no Indians left to fight. So.
Yes, and all that. Therefore, the happening begins to become enormously fascinating,
mm-hmm.
Because it's a way of getting out of that machine-like style of life.
Do you feel there might be another massive anti-Vietnam demonstration in the future, similar to the Pentagon March?
Oh, I don't think there will be one, so long as the peace negotiations continue.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we relapse back into the war and the ante goes up, then I think there'll be more demonstrations than we'll ever dream of.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the war has really become profoundly unpopular by now in this country. As opposed to even to a year ago.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question. Let's suppose that the peace talks were left and this country went to full-scale war with full mobilization. Do you think the same negatives would apply then as they do now on a partial war? Or would they become stronger? Would they become weaker?
Oh, I think the country would really be in a state of near revolution if we had a full mobilization for this war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I think this war is so desperately unpopular. It depends on the kind of war. If we were attacked, by a major power, that'd be a whole different matter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's precisely because we've stepped into a little country, because it's been such a wasteful, scandalous war. I mean, the expenses of it are so enormous. And this war is costing us one-third as much as per year as the Second World War used to cost us. I mean, that's incredible. There we were fighting Germany and Italy and Japan. I mean, it was a worldwide struggle. Here, even granting inflation and all that, still to have a war that costs one-third as much as a tiny little country. I mean, how are we ever going to save Asia from communism without bankrupting ourselves? I mean, no matter how you look at this war, it's an absurdity, you see. So I think that if we went back to fighting it, after all the disillusionment with it, I think the resistance of maybe even the majority of the American people would be enormous.
Now, as a writer, how will you continue your commitment to the anti-Vietnam War position?
I don't know. I just assume I'll continue it. But after all, I've been asked this question even 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said, I don't know. I guess I'll continue it. And then 1 month later, I was working on this book. One thing I've noticed about the war in Vietnam is it seems to keep one working somehow or other. It's as if I get the feeling it's more important to be writing more of the time now. And so I've been working harder the last couple of years than I've worked the previous years. It seems to me as if I'm working all the time, always writing something or whatever.
What about you now as an observer? Let's suppose the new left became the dominant power factor in this country. Would you find yourself in a position where you could avoid criticizing, commenting, and satirizing them?
Oh, it would depend on what they did. I mean, the new left right now has a large potential to be an extraordinary movement or a god-awful movement, because it's got both elements in it at the moment. I mean, there's some wonderful kids in it, and there's some kids in it who are just literally fascist turned inside out.
Totalitarian is a totalitarian, etc., yeah.
Yeah, and you have both. I mean, you have some of those you have a sort of marvelous fresh conception of what democracy means in some kids, and others who are interested only in propaganda and domination.
Personal power, right?
Yeah, not even personal power, but just sort of group power of a dull sort. So you the new left is a fascinating phenomenon right now, and extraordinarily alive.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yes, thank you.
Our monitor guest has been Norman Mailer, author of a new book whose subject is the demonstration and peace march on the Pentagon. The book's title, The Armies of the Night.
Stay right here on NBC.
For the sound of Simon and Garfunkel and Al Capp at the University of North Dakota, all this and more directly ahead on the Monitor Beacon.
Hello. This is Lee Leonard, your guide to New York. If you'd like to know what's happening in and around your town, join me weekdays from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. right here on WNBC. You'll have fun learning because my show is class.
Because of the Salvation Army, boys and girls are learning how to pray and how to play. Because of the Salvation Army, life has new meaning for thousands of elderly men and women. Because of the Salvation Army, a released prisoner is able to face the future again, and his family is given the assistance they need. Because of this service, we salute the Army's Compassion in Action during National Salvation Army Week.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York.
At 19 minutes after the monitor hour, the team of Mr. Simon and Mr. Garfunkel. Expert on nothing, with opinions on everything, Al Capp, takes his opinions and comments to the campuses of America during his college lecture tours. When he visited the University of North Dakota recently, the students tossed some interesting questions at him, and Mr. Capp, not easily rattled, toss some interesting and amusing answers right back at them.
And now let's open the meeting for a while to questions from the floor. You ask the question, I'll give you an evasive answer. Yes, raise your hand.
Two questions about your comic strip. Is your character a passionata von Climax? Your impression
Watch
of
your language here.
Your impression of today's fulfilled woman? And second of all, a little after...
What kind of woman?
Today's fulfilled woman.
A what?
Fulfilled.
A fulfilled woman. Why, certainly. Yeah. I'll answer that right now. If she was any fuller, she'd be illegal. All right.
Will little Abner ever lose his Oedipus complex?
Will little Abner ever lose his Oedipus complex? Will students ever lose their passionate desire to say Oedipus complex in public? That raises the tone of the whole discussion. A little phrase from abnormal psychology does wonders for a meeting like this. Next question.
What do you feel George Wallace's chances are in 68?
Well, let's put it this way. What do you feel our chances are if he wins in 68? Let me add this, however. Don't any of you brush George Wallace off as a buffoon, a man without any sense, and particularly as a man who isn't speaking for a vast and growing and powerful number of Americans. George Wallace is daring to say the things that are locked shamefully in millions of American hearts. He's saying them. And he's giving this country, millions of people, the most enormous relief because he is saying them. It's too bad men of goodwill and good judgment of both races haven't the guts to say what Wallace is saying.
What do you think of the Playboy philosophy?
All Playboy is the most prudish magazine possible in this country. I think that Hugh Hefner is possibly one of the most puritanical men in America today because he's the leader of a generation of starers. You can stare at that, but you mustn't touch it. You go to the Playboy Club and there it is, but you mustn't speak to it. Here's some more questions. I bunched these. How would you rate Arthur Schlesinger Jr. and Kenneth Galbraith? I'd say that they were the Laurel and Hardy of liberalism. How would you rate Laurel and Hardy? Right up there with Fulbright and Morse. Last one was, how would you rate Fulbright and Morse? I prefer Laurel and Hardy.
Monitors, talking, and traveling cartoonist Al Kapp at the University of North Dakota.
Has this ever happened to you?
This way, please.
You're invited to the boss's house, and a maid ushers you into the living room, and she says...
Mr. Phillips will be down in just a minute.
Well, you're a little nervous, so you light up your cigarette, you take a puff, and now you look for an ashtray for the match. No ashtray. So, into your pocket, right? Okay, now you have an ash on your cigarette. What do? You tap it off into your other hand, and you have this awful helpless feeling. And now, into your pocket. And you think, I gotta get rid of this butt. So you grind it out on the sole of your shoe, and you're standing there like a nut perspiring with this thing in your hand. So you think you'll have to get the suit cleaned anyway.
Are there any other reasons not to smoke cigarettes? Ask your American Cancer Society.
Hello.
Orchestra and La La La. Here's another happy note. Monitor is nationwide. For instance, in southern Arizona, folks hear us on radio station KCEE in Tucson. Monitor continues shortly with the award-winning NBC News program, The World and Washington, an in-depth look at the United States' role in world affairs. This is Brad Crandall.
This is Russ Ward inviting you to join me tomorrow morning for the World News Roundup with direct reports from home and abroad here on NBC Radio.